Good Thursday morning to you. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrow. Thank you so much for hanging in there. Great segment before this. 888-874-4888. Call in number. 888-874-4888. Great show. The Big Hug. Sounds like the Big Lebowski, the sequel, right? That would be great. We need another Big Lebowski. What a priceless, timeless movie, right? You're going to meet Carrie Wagner. Carrie's come in on the phone via St. Petersburg. That's a dreamy thought right now. St. Petersburg. Man, I love St. Petersburg. Clearwater Beach. She's going to be talking about a movement about kindness. Started from first graders all the way to sixth graders because they've had enough of the ugliness in the world. And what better way to spread kindness and education of doing good through hugging. And this is taking a worldwide ripple effect. And this is fantastic. Love to talk about this. We're going to be talking about how many different countries, where you can do this. And check out hashtag Big Hug Day, hashtag Big Hug Day or BigHugDay.com. If you can't wait to hear Carrie come on. We're going to be talking about seasonal depression, January. It's, what, 20 degrees in New York City. The streets are covered in salt. Everyone's covered up. All you can see is their eyes, if you're lucky. We're going to be talking about so long, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Sails out into the sunset. Well, maybe not into the sunset. Maybe to a big door in Trenton, whacking him on the ass. Phil Murray is New Jersey's new governor right now, right across the river. We're going to be talking about him, some interesting things he's done so far, and more compelling things on the show. Did I fail to mention my name? Well, I'll tell you what. If you like the show, my name is Mark Farrell. If you don't like the show, my name is Raul Khalib. I say that in spin, actually, when I teach spin. I'm like, if you like the class, my name is Mark. If you don't like the class, my name is Raul. I got to come up with a better name, last name, though, for Raul, though. That's my alias. So actually, when I was waiting to cross the street this morning, I had a flashback because there's a tractor trailer coming to make a turn, a 90-degree turn, and he had a tough time and he had to back up, and there was a few people kind of waving him back, letting him know, you know, that he could back up without crushing any pedestrians, etc. And it reminded me of an incredible New York moment that I had about 7 years ago down in the West Village. So here I am. I'm actually in front of my former radio station building, you know, having a conversation outside on a nice spring day, leaning against the building, and I see an 18-wheeler. Kind of catches my eyes because he's taking this turn, a 90-degree turn, fairly fast. And by the way, we're always on Facebook Live. So go to Progressive Radio Network on Facebook, and you can see us live, or me and my guest via phone, which is very exciting to see a guest via phone. But we're working on the technology to have Skype up here and a split screen. If you want to donate your services, come on over here and make that happen in the next half hour. That would be cool. So here I am leaning against the building, right? And a tractor trailer comes kind of fast around the corner, an 18-wheeler, and he stops abruptly. And he gets out of the cab because there's a car parked illegally. You know how they don't want you to park within, like, I think it's 50 feet within a corner? Most cities are like that. So there's a car, you know, maybe 30 feet in. So he walks right out of the cab of the tractor trailer, and he's got something in his hand. I'm not really paying much attention. I'm kind of continuing my conversation. I'm thinking he's going to knock on the window and say to the person in the car, hey, would you mind moving up or so I can make this turn? So evidently, there's no one in a car. This driver does not hesitate for a second. He has a metal bar in his hand. Bam! Smashes the windshield of the driver's door. Reaches in, puts the car in neutral, pushes it up about, I don't know, 15 feet. It wasn't a big car. It was a mid-sized car at most. And then I'm not even sure if he reached in and put it back in park. And then proceeds to walk back to his truck. Now, again, I have to really explain. He did this like he was in the store going to get a cup of coffee, going out to get the mail at his house, like it was completely normal, far from against the law. And I was just sitting there with my mouth agape. And people were like, snap, 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 taking pictures, you know, videos. I'm like, this guy's goose is cooked. But I'm just sitting there in complete and utter denial because I'm like, this cannot be happening. This is New York City, but still, I cannot believe this is happening. Gets back into his trailer, puts in gear, starts shifting, and drives right away. And in the meantime, I think the cops, New York City's finest, pull up within like 30 or 60 seconds. And I'm like, he went that way and made it right. And I'm sure he got snagged. His plates were from Massachusetts. I imagine the guy probably had a really crappy day, probably got, caught in traffic snarl after traffic snarl. But still, the fact that you could see that take place on the streets in New York City. With the biggest surprise was, the one thing of the guy got out of his truck. I can't move. I can't turn. I can't back up. What am I going to do? Here's what I'm going to do. But he did this like he's done it 1,000 times, and he probably has. So that got me thinking about all the times I've worked in New York City for another radio station. We had a truck, and we used to broadcast live for our radio station. But then we used to get hired. We used to subcontract ourselves out. The truck and myself and another gentleman, two other gentlemen, would come with the truck. We'd be the engineers, producers, and mixers, etc. So whether it was a live jazz club recording for the Blue Note, George Benson, or David Bowie's Tin Machine on 42nd Street, I mean, we've done hundreds of shows. And it was a really spectacular time in my life, because not only was I in radio, I'm doing live radio for a very cool station, and even for other cool formats, rock and roll, pop, Z100, WNEW-FM, Howard Stern. When he was a self-proclaimed king of New York, you know where he was? He was in my truck driving around. I was actually not in the truck. I set the truck up that day, but he and Robin Quivers were in the truck, and my colleague was the engineer sitting right next to him. I was actually on a rooftop doing the microwave hop. So wherever they drove, we had to switch locations because he was going to, remember this? He would drive to different radio stations. Very ballsy move. Of course, not that unique for Howard Stern. Drive up to different radio stations, get out with a bullhorn. Hey, I just want to let you know I'm the self-proclaimed king of New York. And it was so times like that were really, really original. So it made me think about, when I saw this tractor trailer this morning, the story I just told you, and about all these different memories that kept kind of flooding back to me. One of them was, I remember there was a fight in the street. So now we would be setting up this truck. It was a really big, it's probably like a 30-foot truck, beautiful state-of-the-art. I mean, plush. I mean, I would sleep in there, put the captain's chairs back after, sometimes we'd work 24, 48 hours straight, because if we're doing a remote for a station, we did the concert in Central Park for Paul Simon, the microwave feed for all the radio stations for United Stations in United States. We did an international feed. So it was really Radio France, Radio Dublin. I mean, it was really, really fascinating work that we did. But the hours were long. So consequently, we got to see like the underbelly of New York City in a lot of cool ways and some scary ways, like when there was a fight next to your truck and we're afraid to open a door. But then a fire engine pulls up and three firemen get off the truck with axes. And there's no better way to break up a fight when you look up and see three firemen daunting with all their gear on, hat on, holding an axe. People are like, okay, all right, it's cool, man. Let's get out of here. That's one of them. And I remember this story. This story seems like it was ripped out of a movie. I remember being positioned at a stoplight, and you had to get a license to park wherever we were, from the mayor's office of television and movie production, whatever. So we'd always have to apply for a permit. So we'd have that displayed on the dashboard, and we'd always get knocking, the permit's right there. So we were always parked in pretty good spots. So you got to saw everything. So I remember one day there was a car. It was a nice car. It was definitely a high-end sports car coming up to an intersection. I don't know if he was in the right or the wrong, but there was an older woman crossing, and she was not happy. She was perturbed about the driver. Maybe he or she came too close to this pedestrian, but she took her umbrella, turned it upside down, and put it on the roof of his car, the hood of his car, and gouged it all the way across. Sorry if that just really did nails on a chalkboard for you. And I'm just sitting there going oh my God, I cannot believe this. And the driver just sat there and kept cool as a cucumber and didn't move, didn't react. I mean, it was a dear old lady. Well, not that old, probably in her 60s, 70s. Very capable. But she was peeved, man. She was seething. And she just messed that hood up, man. And I was like, oh, my God. So the things we would see were unbelievable. Now, this next story is kind of interesting. Now, this wasn't something that was an antic that was on the streets, and I have a few more I could share with you. But this was really a cool event, and it was actually the scariest time for me as well, because there was a great, great venue called St. John's the Divine Cathedral that's up on 130-ish Street on the Upper West Side. Does that sound right, guys? 130th Street, St. John's the Divine Cathedral. So they have a great mass there every year, holiday mass. So we're doing a broadcast for I don't even know who, but we're recording this. We got, you know, we got mics throughout the whole cathedral, crowd mics that will pick up the ambient natural acoustic sounds. But now I had to go all the way up to the top, where the cathedral ceiling is, the top of the cathedral ceiling. Now, there's a catwalk up there. Now, what's interesting, the cathedral ceiling is not the roof of the building. So there is a space, I'd say, maybe 20 feet between the top of the cathedral ceiling, between the top of the roof of the actual structure, the cathedral exterior. So up there, there is no light. There's a catwalk, and that's why I call it a catwalk, because it was maybe 2 feet wide at most. So here I am. I'm up there with microphones and a microwave dish. And they're doing like these, like, it sounds very haunting for me upstairs because it's pitch black. But if you're in a cathedral, it's beautiful. I mean, the songs were, I think it was Paul Winter. No, not Paul Winter. Winter Solstice. Oh, my God, he's a fabulous, talented musician, kind of a new age artist, and it escapes me right now, the artist's name, but he does it every year. But here I am. I remember being up on this catwalk in the pitch black, and I don't know how many steps it took to get up there. It was a workout. I remember if I forgot one connector for a microwave cable, a BNC, a barrel connector, I'd be like, oh, my God, I got to go all the way back down. Can somebody meet me halfway? I just remember being up there going like, holy shit, this is scary. I mean, I know I'm a grown man, but this is scary. I'd rather be on the streets of New York City and, you know, having my life kind of handed to me, you know? But this is like the unknown. Like, it's very ethereal, and there's spirits up here and everything. But it was a great time, and I look back at all those events, and I remember doing the Beatles concert. I think it was the 50th anniversary of, not Abbey Road, but we did it in Times Square, and we did it for K-Rock. That was the rock station that Howard Stern was broadcasting on. And we were literally at the Times Square point where it actually comes to a point like a diamond. So the truck is pointed near the top end of the point. So that would be the north end of the block. And then we have, of course, cables going to the stage, and I was kind of the stage producer that day. And I remember being up there and having a great time. I'm like, wow, we're in Times Square. Our audio is being fed to areas all around, and on FM, the local terrestrial rock station, WNAW-FM back then. That was the iconic station, New York, really heritage rock station that no more, unfortunately. But then, of course, two different stations, sister stations. And of course, throughout, that was pre-web, so it wasn't on the web. But I remember being there, and all of a sudden, the start of the concert starts to happen. And I can't remember, was Paul McCartney there? Anyway, I'm at the front of the stage, and all of a sudden, these people, this crowd amassed. I mean, it was a fairly big crowd. I couldn't even tell you how many people were there, thousands. But I get pushed against the stage, so much so that the stage was kind of low, up to my upper thigh, and I'm tall, I'm like 6'3". So it ripped my pants. And I had never experienced like being afraid in a crowd before. So I'm on my headset, screaming into the truck. I'm getting pummeled. You know, help me here. It was kind of scary because I could not do anything. Here I am leaning against the stage, like doubled over. It's almost like I was leaning over to pick something up, but I was leaning onto the stage, and it was kind of scary. But after that moment passed, It was a great event. But all these things, you know, this tractor trailer just making this turn this morning made me think about all those fun times doing all these different broadcasts. I remember being at a hotel doing a broadcast for Radio Dublin in the middle of the night, of course, because we were doing a live show for them in Ireland, which was 6 hours ahead, or was it Australia? I'm not sure. But anyway, I just remember being in a hotel and these people and the radio hosts from that local station, whether it was Australia or Ireland, were just getting pie-eyed, drinking their faces off. And I'm up there and just trying to stay awake and doing the mixing and everything. And it was just hysterical. And just the people that you met. And that's the exposure to a different culture and their media and their radio broadcast and their content and their programming was just really something that was invaluable. So it was just something that was a nice reminder this morning on a nice 20-degree day when I'm crossing one of the main thoroughfares in New York City. And you know what? On a day like this, you need a hug, right? So I want to tell you about something that I talked about in the beginning of the show. It's called the Big Hug. And this is happening, and this was started by a bunch of kids, grades 1 through 6, and it's just a fantastic way to scale down and to simplify everyone's life and perceptions and thoughts and realize, you know, it's all about kindness. And here is a 60-second piece, a PSA that's running hopefully on if you're in the States, on a network near you. And then we're going to come back and meet the Hug Ambassador, Carrie Wagner.
Here today to organize the Big Hug. We want to get 12,000 people to break a world record to spread kindness around the world.
The Big Hug is where people from around the world come together in one day to show that we all still love each other.
There are a lot of bad things going on in the world right now, and we want to spread kindness and love.
We want to show the world all the good still out there.
We need to help each other.
Our goal is to raise money for children's hospitals.
With this past year, there's been so many different things that the kids have had to respond to that they just started getting inundated with bad news. They want to go after the world record for the largest hug on January 21st. It's National Hugging Day, and now there are hugs going on all over the world. So they have global hugs. They have 6 in Israel with Muslim, Christian, and Jewish children all in one hug, hugging together. This is their way of stepping up.
Different people can come together as one group.
Bad only wins when good does nothing.
We believe in the power of kindness.
Everybody has power and a voice. All these kids believe it, and they believe they can do anything. So please come on January 21st to National Hugging Day or find a hug near you. Post a hug, hashtag Big Hug Day. If these kids are doing this, imagine what we can do.
Ah, kids, they have such clarity, don't they? Ah, what a great way to start the show here. Coming live from St. Petersburg, I'd like to introduce you and welcome to the show the ambassador of the Big Hug, Carrie Wagner. Carrie, how are you?
Hey, good morning. A little bit warmer than you are, I suspect.
Don't rub it in, my dear. You know, that's one of my favorite vacation destinations, Clearwater Beach.
It is beautiful, I have to tell you. And I'm sitting in sunshine right now, and I'm bragging to all my family members up north.
Well, how did this epiphany begin? Because, you know, first through sixth graders, they often, you see them giving hugs to each other. I have a daughter who's 5 years old, and they always hug it out. I love it. Have a good day, and they just hug each other, and such a sweet form of embracing.
Well, I'll tell you what, this group of kids is just extraordinary. They do amazing things. So they work to make the world a better place all the time. In fact, a couple years ago, there was a horrific flooding that happened in South Carolina, and they heard about it, and they were afraid that the kids there in this rural town wouldn't have Christmas. So they collected enough presents to take the entire town of Johnsonville, South Carolina, Christmas. They held a big Christmas dinner for the whole town, brought each kid through presents, rebuilt homes, cleaned neighborhoods. Then they heard the story of Myra Ingram on the radio about she was a Katrina survivor and had lost everything, including her daughter, who had just given birth in the floods there and had moved to Baton Rouge to never flood again. And yet she flooded again last year, and she lost everything again in Baton Rouge.
Wow.
So they tracked her down, brought a busload of supplies, brought her furniture, appliances, fed her whole neighborhood, cleaned it up, brought 3 school supplies. And this is a handful, I kid you not, of age 10 and younger. And so they're constantly doing things like that. They just fed thousands of migrant workers after the the hurricanes here in Florida. And while they were preparing for their own hurricane, they sent a gym full of toys to Houston. So that's how these kids are.
Wow. Too bad we couldn't put them in Congress.
I know.
We'd get some things done. Wow. What heartfelt and industrious kids. That's incredible.
Yeah. So they, so last year they just got overwhelmed with all the stuff they were trying to respond to. And so they said, they looked up one day and they said, you know what the world needs? The world needs a giant hug because, you know, hugs make you feel better. And it shows that we all still care. And there may be a few people in the world causing all kinds of harm, but there's a lot more people out there that care and have compassion. So what if we all came together? So they wanted to create this big hug as a giant symbol of compassion, kindness, unity. So they started with this one here in St. Pete that they're asking, hey, if you can come to the big hug on Sunday here. We need 12,000 people here to break the world record. But now they've inspired hugs all over the world. They have in Israel with Muslim, Christian, and Jewish kids all hugging together. Egypt.
That's the symbolism alone right there. It's incredible.
It's just amazing. In Times Square, from Times Square, working with Broadway. Mm-hmm.
And that's happening noon at Times Square. A lot of the Broadway actors will be out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, and Jennifer Lawrence just posted a hug that her mom gave us last night, and the Dallas Mavericks changed their kiss cam to a hug cam, and the University of Kentucky, University of Florida are doing a big basketball game this Saturday in Rupp Arena, and they're going to have invite all 23,000 people there to hug. But the idea is just to put kindness out in the world. And one quick story, too, that tells you about these kids. We were actually in New York City on the plaza of the Today Show when the guy tried to blow himself up a couple weeks ago. So we were two blocks away, roughly, from where that guy, you know, caused this incident when it happened. And so there's the sirens going off. There's people, if it's, you know, the people that gather to watch the Today Show. They're scared. They're nervous. It's on all the screens there. And the kids just started hugging people. And it was amazing to see adults, their faces light up. And they were distracted from that moment of horror and touched by what these kids were doing. So they inspire me.
And that's the antithesis of hate and crime and vileness, that they just turned it completely around that day and went for the opposite, you know, form of that and turned it into a hug, which is love.
Well, you know, the other touching moment in New York City on that trip was, which we had hugged the Rockettes, we were with Broadway, we went and found those first responders that apprehended the bomber, and we hugged them. But then we ended at the 9/11 Memorial. And for these kids, I forget, you know, they weren't born when that happened.
That's
so
right,
for
sure.
Us as adults, it's already heavy for us to be there because it brings us back to that moment in time. But for these kids, it was the first time that they were hearing the 911 calls and seeing the planes go into the building. And they were just dumbfounded by the whole thing. And I have one of them look up at me and he goes, I just don't understand why. Why would anybody do that? And so one of them boiled down and said, well, it's hate. And then the other child said, well, you know what, that's why we want to hug people. We need kindness in the world because we can have the biggest army in the world. But if you still have people who have hate in their heart, you're still going to have things like this happen. And I thought, wow, it's so incredible.
Really astute, incredibly astute. Carrie Wagner, is this a private school? Is this a public school that these kids are in?
This is an eclectic group. This is homeschool, foster kids, adopted kids, private school kids, public school kids, all come together, at-risk school kids.
Fantastic.
It's a free group. They come from all different churches and religions, and they come together, and we talk about problem solving. We talk about how they have impact in the world, either negative or positive, and that everybody can do something. For some, it might be collecting money. Some, it might be cooking food for people. Some, it might be, you know, mowing grass. But what we found time and time again, it's just showing up, you know, for people to know that you thought of them and that you care.
Absolutely, yep.
And that they matter.
We're here for you.
So much. Exactly. And that's the number one thing.
And you know what? Also, the big hug can be a selfish act in a good way, because as good as it is to receive a hug, it's great to give a hug. And also, last night I speak at schools and organizations, and last night I learned about a local organization that is a substance abuse organization doing great work, and they have to go out to a mall this Sunday, and really against their will, because it's out of their comfort zone, and take part in National Hug Day, International Hug Day, and go up and wear T-shirts approved and everything. Of course, that's very important. We should say that, because some people, obviously, especially in New York City, we should make sure people realize it's not mugging day, it's hugging with an H, hugging day. But in New Jersey, these kids who are overcoming, you know, a lot of trials and tribulations and recovery, have to go out and hug somebody, because it's putting them in a non-comfortable situation.
Absolutely. And, you know, we found time and time again, like as we've been preparing for the hug, is, you know, just the simple act of giving a hug is so good for you from a health standard, mm-hmm. from a mental health standard. Little infants, I know Huggies has been one of our sponsors. They spend so much time and energy with hugging infants, because from the very beginning and when we're born, we're meant to connect. And being
the human touch is so important.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, for seniors, I think I'm at the study I remember reading years ago, how just the fact that if you just touch their hand and rub their hand, it just does wonders for them.
Oh, it's amazing. Like, we have some of our hugs happening across America. We have a senior home in Kentucky that they're so excited that they're going to get their hug on. And then we have,
get their hug on. I love it.
Yeah, and then we have an orphanage of Coptic Christians in Egypt where some of their parents were beheaded, and they're hugging. And
wow.
There's all these different stories that you have along the way of a foster home for girls in Alabama. It's just amazing some of the stories behind these hugs and why they're happening. But one thing that is true, and we talk about it with the kids, is the hugs or a smile transcends language barriers.
Absolutely.
So you may not speak the same language, but if you give somebody a hug or you smile or you're kind, it's an international language that we can all unify behind.
Carrie Wagner is my guest. She's the hug ambassador for the Big Hug happening down in St. Petersburg. If you want to jet down there, if you're listening to us live from St. Petersburg or anywhere in Florida this Sunday, January 21st, it's hashtag Big Hug Day, hashtag Big Hug Day. We're on the internet at bighugday.com, bighugday.com. Your website has everything. Now, the world record of 12,000 wasn't enough just for them. Was it them imploring you by saying, come on Carrie, we have to get other states and other nations involved as well?
Oh yes, I tell you what, these kids, they think big, so I love working with them. They really do. But they said it's a global message, and they were tired of hearing in the news all of us fighting and arguing, and it seemed like we were more divided than we were unified. And they said at the end of the day, if we would just concentrate on what we have in common, which we all have commonalities, and so what we differ on, you know, at least we could, you know, be able to talk and compromise and you know, maybe at some point in time get world peace. So it's just their way of stepping up, and they felt like, hey, listen, they also do work. They've helped orphans in Russia. They've done human waste composting in Nicaragua. They have, and they actually, we were there in Israel this summer, and one of the little girls told the mayor of Jerusalem what we were doing. And he was like, oh, we should get in on this. We so need this here. And that's how it happened. So they have presented the kids with their keynotes and the spellings and all to corporate CEOs, to organizations. I mean, they really hit it from all sides, because they thought, what if we all came together? What if we all could set aside that we go to different churches and we have different belief systems, but the one thing we all want is kindness and respect. So what if we all just came together to show that? Because the kids' quote is, bad only wins when good does nothing.
Correct.
It's so true.
It sounds like a Dalai Lama statement, but so accurate.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. Now, do you think that the kids, the fact that they are children, up to what you said, 10 years of age?
Yes, from basically 10 to 6.
10 to 6, get all this reception, a warm reception, and willingness to jump on board because of their age. Because it seems like, you know, it's great that they're so astute and put themselves out there with such positivity. It just seems a shame that if, you know, a bunch of 20-year-olds did it, it wouldn't have the same impact. And hopefully it would, but it's great that children are seen as change makers at such a young age. And it would be great if the world can appreciate the fact that, you know, at such a young age, yes, they're maybe naive in certain ways, but that's sometimes a very good thing, because when you strip all this other muck and garbage away, that you have the real things that matter in life.
Absolutely. Well, I tell the kids, I said, you know, in many ways, you're more powerful than I am. You're a lot harder to say no to than me.
You're right. You're right.
But I think,
good point.
Adults are inspired that these little kids, not only are they just doing this project, but like I said, they have been working to make the world a better place in so many different ways. And so they hear that and they see that, and I think they're inspired. And I have a lot of adults that say, wow, these kids are doing this, man, I should do more. So they're inspirational, I think, because when they're not jaded, I don't think people think that they have an angle. I don't think that people are trying to see what they can get from
mm-hmm.
them.
You yeah, know, sure.
Jaded.
No ulterior motives.
Yeah, and they know that what the kids are speaking is truth because, right. you know, mm-hmm. it just comes out in the bluntest way.
Sure.
But, you know, I mean, that there's also an appreciation for that. And then the other thing that is amazing, I think, you know, if the kids can do this at 10, imagine what they could do at 30.
Absolutely.
As they're planning this hug, they see, hey, I can try to get this message out globally at the age of 8. Why can't I do XYZ at 30? And they're also learning to problem solve. Like, here's a wall. I'm going to go over it. I'm going to go around it. I'm going to go through it. I'm going to go under it. But I'm going to get this done. Because you can imagine trying to do something so large. You know, what they've come up, you know, again, at the same time, they've had so many blessings, so many people get behind them and support them, like Chris Jericho, but WWE superstars hosting the event for them. Jennifer Lawrence posting something, the Dallas Mavericks doing something. So they're getting the support because I think people are hungry for something like this. We would like to see more kindness in the world. We'd like to have something positive to rally around that unifies us. So I think we all, and most people want to do something. They want to give back. They're just not sure how they can. But this is something simple. And a smile, a hug is free. It only takes a second. And they really, really need people here in Florida. They've got a global outreach. Now I just got to make sure our Floridians show up. Tropicana
at least 12,000 of them, correct?
Yeah. They're going to be at the Tampa Bay Lightning game tonight. You know, inviting people to come. And but it's been such a great lesson for the kids, too, because here they are presenting in front of a room full of adults in suits. And so the kids go in, they give their message, and it's been a great experience on both sides.
Oh, absolutely. And tell me if I'm wrong. Sorry, Carrie, tell me if I'm wrong if I would say that I think the world or global effort hug eclipses the world record for 12,000. Because, I mean, that's the messaging.
You know what? I told the kids last night, we met last night again, and I said, hey, I want you to know, I said, look, we're pushing as hard as we can to get that record for you. The reason they want to do the record is because they wanted to get attention for it and show that there were so many mm-hmm. people that cared.
Understandable.
So that was the goal. But I said, I want you to know, it's incredible what you have already done, that you've gotten this message of kindness out all over the world. And I said, you are setting records in kindness. You've got the most global hugs ever happening. You have, you're definitely going to have like the biggest hug in the United States, and because the current record's in Canada. And you also will have the biggest hug in Florida. So I said, you're hitting records, but most importantly, you're getting your message out there. And that's incredible. What you've done is a handful of little kids. So I was really commending them. But you know what else is great is what they do, they don't see as being extraordinary. they look at it as it's what you're supposed to do.
And that's a great teaching moment that so many of us as parents, I think, don't realize. This is a little thing that can go really far, that these moments that children, like you said before, like they're teaching you, but we're sometimes as parents, we're conduits. And I think a lot of adults are limited in their thinking like, oh, they're only 10, they're only 14. But no, not in this age, because obviously if they're studying and they're part of their age group, I mean, you can't limit their minds because they are capable of so much. And instead of spending, you know, 5 hours a day on Xbox, et cetera, or on social media, when they are driven and educated and fed the proper or insightful messages for them to decide, you know, what to do and how to do it, you know, I think it's limitless, their capabilities.
Yeah, and in fact, today, actually, they have a bunch of toys being delivered out in California to fire victims out there.
Oh my God, where do these kids stop? Where do they get this from? This is amazing. So what's the name of the organization that oversees this?
BGOLD. It's capital B, G-O-L-D, no E in between. It's kind of like the golden rule.
Correct.
Treat others the way you want to be treated. And so it's BGOLD. And we have the girls group and we have boys group, and then they combine. It's free. And we meet every other week for like 2 hours. But it's great. So they'll come to me and they'll say, Miss Carrie, oh my gosh, what are we going to do about the mudslide? I'm like, okay, what do you want to do? What can we do? So like earthquake victims in Mexico, they wrote letters telling them that they were thinking of them. And actually the Mexican ambassador wrote them the most profound letter thanking them for their support.
Is that posted by chance?
I don't think I have that posted. I need, you know what, I will post that. I don't
Please do, because I'd like to share it on my page.
Absolutely. And then they did, when France had the terrorist attack, they did a huge, 1,000, they had 1,000 people release golden balloons with messages of love for France. And they sent banners to the UK when the Ariana Grande concert bombing happened. So they're, I kid you not, they are constantly working and thinking, how can we help others? And they do it at a local level, too. They make chocolates and take them to senior citizens who may not have anybody on Valentine's Day. I mean, they make pizzas for homeless people.
Oh, my. It just stops. This is unbelievable. Yeah. You can't make this up.
Yeah, no, it's just incredible. And like I said, they're a group of kids. And so,
no, these are not a group of kids. These are a group of CEOs.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, they really are. Because
unfettered.
They have a can-do attitude. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, unbelievable. Carrie Wagner, thank you so much for your time and the exquisite, profound work that you're doing as a leader, as an ambassador, giving a platform with BGOLD. And this is something that I hope gets more attention, and we will do our best to publicize it, because, I mean, this doesn't have to be, a hug can happen any day, but just the goodness, the kindness, the understanding, having an open mind is invaluable, and more of us, age 6 to 60 to 90, have to grasp and embrace this as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thank you for getting our message out. We really appreciate it. So bighugday.com, come out to Tropicana Field.
Absolutely. Do you have shirts for sale online?
We do. We do have shirts for sale, and they are super bright. You will never get hit by a car with a shirt on.
Would that be available on your website, bighugday.com?
It is, bighugday.com. Please go on there. And all the money, and again, all the money they are taking and they're giving to children's hospitals, two particular hospitals that were treating kids impacted by the hurricane.
Well, so, but of again, course, I would expect nothing else from these kids. Wow.
Exactly.
Please give all these incredible huggers our best, and a huge hug, air hug coming to you and to all your kids in St. Petersburg from all of us here at the Progressive Radio Network and New York City.
Thank you so much.
All the best to you, Carrie. Yes, thank you. All right, go for that 12,000 record.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
My name is Mark Farrell. We'll be right back right after this.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from Progressive Voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Dr. Cheryl Selman, and I'm the host of What Women Must Know, every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. As a naturopathic doctor and psychotherapist, I am always seeking the latest solutions to help you rejuvenate and regenerate your body, mind, and spirit. So join me, Dr. Cheryl, and my inspiring guests, authors, health practitioners, and wise elders, to empower yourself by expanding your knowledge about your health and your hormones, and to gain fresh new perspectives on life. That's What Women Must Know every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
So this is really cool. So I know, of course, I like to listen to my show and email everybody the links to, you know, past shows, et cetera, and also my colleagues here at the Progressive Radio Network. But you know what? It's a little bit labor intensive to cut and paste, to always put that link to this page or that show or Gary's show, who, by the way, follows me a little bit from now. But guess what? We can make it really easy for you. Just go to your app store. We have a free Progressive Radio Network app. Yes, it's here. Finally. Yay. In our new Swank Studios, we got that. And we got a free app for you. Just go to your favorite store, iTunes store, whatever. Go to download the Progressive Radio Network and boom, you can listen live. Boom. You have all the shows accessible like 1, 2, 3, as fast as your download speed can take it. So it's a new year. It's a new app, the Progressive Radio Network app, available wherever you like to shop and downloadable. Listen to this show, Insight. Listen to Gary Noel's show live. Or if you can't listen to it live, it's always available. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network, 42 minutes past the hour. Was that incredible or what? My God. Never underestimate the power of youth and their bright eyes and their ideals and their just incredible, impassioned ideals, I should say, because it's just wonderful to see kids so young. They're not even in high school, to be so passionate about changing perspectives and touching people's lives. I mean, they were here. You heard Carrie Wagner talk about being in New York City on the day of the explosion in Port Authority, and they were unfettered. Here they are giving hugs in the middle of Rockefeller Center. Incredible, incredible stuff. And you know what? And I'm happy to say that I had an incredible night last night. It wasn't a big venue, no big stage. I am in sort of a basement of actually a beautiful house of an organization called CFC, Coming Full Circle. It's an organization for substance abuse and recovery, alcohol recovery, and so much more. These great individuals started this a couple years ago, and they invited me to speak last night to a very, very intimate group of, say, I'd say about 20 or 30 people, and I relish in situations like this, because being up on stage, it's a different world because you're separated. You can't feel, it's not palpable, the audience. You can see them, and being visually impaired, it's a little bit difficult for me to actually kind of lock eyes with somebody when I'm making a point. I try my best and I look at them, but I can't tell if they're looking at me per se, but I imagine they are. But in a situation like this, I really, really embrace it because I had to speak, or wanted to speak, and they asked me to speak about mental health, and I spoke about drugs and alcohol. So my history with both of these. And last night's audience was, this is a two-part talk, last night's audience were family members, caregivers, etc. And it just reminded me of how much I love what I do when I'm not on air here. Because I remember when I was asked to speak for an organization called Road Recovery, kind of a similar organization based in New York City, dealing with substance abuse, alcohol recovery. And I remember being asked to speak, and I'm like, oh, great, great. Gene Bowen. Oh, Gene, I think I just screwed up your last name. Gene, I'm remiss in remembering your last name. Incredible guy. He asked me to speak. I said, sure. So I go there thinking there's going to be, I don't know, 100 kids. There's a stage because it's an incredible facility. And I go there and I walk in a door and it's a small room and there's like 30 or 40 people. And I am like 5 feet away from people in the circle. And I'm like, whoa. And it was kind of daunting because this was before I made my real foray into the world of speaking. So at first I'm like, oh my God, this is nothing like I expected. I'm usually, you know, on stage, you know, hosting events for Special Olympics, New York Achilles at Track Club, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Yeah, and this is totally, totally different. So I remember knowing and saying to myself, wow, I know this is a tough audience because my father was an alcoholic and I grew up around alcoholics, especially the meetings my father would bring me. And it was a great bonding situation that we had. I used to go set up the chairs and help him make coffee at AA meetings because he used to run them not too far from our house. So when the first person or, you know, the first 10 people arrived and they started smoking their cigarettes and these plumes of smoke, my father would be like, okay, I'm going to run you home. But I was always around these meetings in some capacity or not. So I'm very familiar with it. And of course, with my history of drinking, I would sometimes go in to an AA meeting and say, hey, listen, I'm not an alcoholic, but I'm one step away. And I would kind of go in there for a refresher. But I knew that alcoholics can be sometimes very bitter. Have you heard the expression dry drunk? It's people who basically are angry because a lot of times, you know, it's no news that people drink or do things in excess because they're masking something else. So when you take away that alcohol, if you take away those drugs, then you're dealing with raw feelings or emotions. And sometimes people don't go into therapy or they don't do the 12 steps, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very different. But I remember going into that first road recovery meeting. And then when I saw the actual environment, the chair set up so close to me, I was like, whoa, this is daunting. I remember looking around, you know, making eye contact with people. And I remember two individuals. One of them just kind of was like staring at me. And I'm like, whoa. So I was talking, you know, I don't know how long I talked, for an hour. Then there's another guy who was very antsy. He would be like looking around, looking at the ceiling, like, you know, looking to far left, far right. I'm like, oh, man, this isn't good. This is not good. Oh, man. So, you know, I'm doing my thing. And my thing was much different than it is now because I always speak from the heart. But I imagine it wasn't as polished. And it doesn't need to be polished in a setting like that. But it probably wasn't as polished as it is now. But at the end, you know, we had Q&A. And one of those guys I just told you about, the guy who was looked disinterested number one and disinterested number person number two. And the guy raised his hand. And I said, yeah. And he said, Gene, you know, you invited this guy in to speak. And I'm like, oh, no, he's going to slam me right in front of everybody. And he said, and I couldn't have gotten more out of this talk if I've written it myself. And I was like, what? And then the other guy spoke up a few minutes later with the same or very similar, very positive comments. And here I am thinking the whole time when I would glance over at these guys thinking, these guys think I'm a piece of shit. I'm not an alcoholic, but I've been so close. I was on the precipice of being an alcoholic. So they're probably pissed off that I'm not AA, but I'm here speaking, you know, being vulnerable, putting all my information and stuff, personal baggage out there, but they don't care because I'm not AA. And I couldn't have been more wrong. And that was the actual talk that solidified my decision when radio started to change, when digital medium was becoming obviously competitive radio 7 years ago, that I'm like, yep, that's it. If I can win over some people who aren't the happiest, understandably, they're going through a difficult time, man. If I can win over people who are going through major adversity, then I think I got a shot at being a speaker. So fast forward to last night. It was a great event because it's just a great intimate way for me to relay my personal experiences of going through depression, anxiety, and panic attacks, and how I thought I was really coming unhinged, losing my mind, how I didn't tell anybody, how I couldn't sleep for like weeks, except for like 2 hours a night. There was hardly any separation between days, and how I was losing weight, how I'd had to change my sheets two or three times a night because I was so profusely sweating that it was just unbelievable. than how I finally asked for help and how I finally had to go on medication because I was just losing my mind. How I had intrusive thoughts of diving in front of subway cars oncoming to me, and how I realized that this is part of normal depression, that you have intrusive thoughts. They don't know why it happens, but they do know it's very common. So all these different things, how I muddled through it and how I would, this is funny, how I would actually, believe it or not, I was afraid to go home after work when I was going through the thick of this because I had a scary thought that if I went home, I would kill myself. It's just how the brain works when you're depressed. So what I would do, it was I would go on dates. I kid you not, I was going on dates. Now, all right. My job during the day was interviewing people and I had to listen the best I could, even though I was hardly able to focus being filled with anxiety. But here I am now on a date and I really couldn't listen. And now I didn't even try to listen. I would just be like, okay, if I can kill just 2 or 3 hours, have a couple glasses of wine, kind of take the edge off a little bit, then I can go home and hopefully have a decent night. And that wouldn't happen, but I would try it because I would do anything, as I would convey to the audience last night, anything to not let, I called it my beast, the beast win. And that's what I did. And through that and through therapy and a lot of hard work, and I did win. And as I tell them, listen, nobody wants to go, and I don't wish panic, depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, anything on anybody, my worst enemy, not that I have a worst enemy, because it's just a very, very difficult, trying thing. But the silver lining is it makes you so much more of a powerful, resilient, sensitive person, more empathetic for people. It just makes you a better person. And it makes you realize that you can survive anything. You really can survive anything if you can survive that. So it was a great talk. Thank you so much to CFC for inviting me and to the real kind, generous people who came up to me and spoke to me for almost like 45 minutes afterwards, because after story and how they relayed and how they wanted to ask more questions, what worked for me, what did they suggest, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what really makes it special is that I was able to, my words were able to reverberate with them and to hopefully have an impact. And I think mostly the most important thing I said to them is it's great that you're here for the person that you love, your son, your daughter, your spouse, but you have to remember, you have to take care of yourself. It's great that you love that person. It's great that you give them the ability to do whatever they need, but don't enable them and take care of yourself, because if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of someone else. And also, know when not to take care of them, because they have to be accountable. They have to take responsibility of their lives. So it was a great talk, and I look forward to more of those intimate talks. It's just a nice little reprieve from doing the bigger talks, which are fun. Certainly, I love those. But it's a whole different vibe. So Chris Christie, yeah, he's gone. And just the other day, Phil Murphy, exactly. Who the hell is Phil Murphy? Oh, just some millionaire who, you know, here's my example of Phil Murphy. What do I know of him? All I know is that his property taxes are like in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. His property taxes for his house. So how in touch can this dude be? I don't know. But I have to say, in one day, he looks like he's going to put some heads on the chopping block from the New Jersey Port Authority. So if you're not in the Tri-State area, the Port Authority is kind of a quasi-state private entity that is as functional as your most dysfunctional family. Not I mean your personal family. I mean like a dysfunctional family in general. So I kind of like that. But it's very interesting that he did something that's never been done before. Having been part of the New Jersey Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired, otherwise known as CBVI, he asked for the resignation of the executive director, Daniel Fry. And this is not an appointed position. This is a position that's, I guess, influenced by the governor and I think hired by the Department of Health and Human Services in New Jersey. I think the former Head of that was Jennifer Velez, an incredible person and woman who brought him aboard. But gone, bam, in a few hours. So Phil Murphy, I don't know much about him, but he is stirring the pot, man, and hopefully in a good way. And a couple weeks ago, for to jog your memory, I invited the mayor of Hoboken in here, Ravi Bala. Ravi Bala is the first turban-wearing Sikh mayor in the United States. Incredible guy. He's doing some incredible work. As a matter of fact, he made some headway with New Jersey Transit in a different capacity just the other day. It's kind of a landmark thing because they were looking to use more land in Hoboken, and it looks like it's going to be preserved. So he's doing some great stuff so far. But Ravi Bala is going to be in good company because new Jersey governor, Phil Murphy, has just appointed Gurbir Guval. He's the former Bergen County prosecutor who's going to be the first attorney general, Sikh attorney general in the United States. So how about that for, they're totally unrelated in terms of Ravi Bala, the mayor of Hoboken, ran on a ticket and beat the former mayor. But the fact that we have two prominent people in the state of New Jersey, one appointed by the new governor, Phil Murphy, it's pretty interesting. And I'm hopeful that really we can do something very positive in New Jersey. The property taxes, there's everything that's just kind of really, really kind of getting out of hand. And before, we're running out of time here, but I just want to mention, I was talking to somebody here at the station. I'm like, man, this January has been really bleak. It's cold out. You know, the holidays really weren't as good as I was expecting them to be. I feel down. So seasonal depression, we're going to talk about this next week, but very quickly, you know, it's a real thing. And there's a thing called, I think, the happy box. I talked about this a couple of weeks, but check it out. But basically, it's totally normal. Don't freak out if you're like, oh, I'm depressed because it's January, man. Unless you're in St. Petersburg, like Carrie Wagner, who's in charge of the big hug. How could you be depressed when you're in charge of the big hug? But it's totally normal to feel depressed and just, you know, hang in there, get some vitamin D, talk to your doctor, talk to some friends, get some exercise. And you'll feel better. And give yourself a hug. And get a hug. And give a hug, right? So that's the show for today. We had many more things to get to. But you know what? When good conversation goes longer, good conversation happens. We'll have more to talk about next week. My name is Mark Farrell. If you would like to have me speak at your school, college, corporation, or organization, check out MarkFarrellMotivation.com. That's MarkFarrellMotivation.com. Have a great day. Stay warm. Talk to you next week.